Welcome to Philly Fortune Talks with your host, Jake Penny, where the city's brightest minds share the secrets behind their success. Are you ready to be inspired?
Awesome. Hey, everybody. It's Jake Penny from Philly Fortune Talks podcast. I have the pleasure of having a serial entrepreneur and real estate investor, Chase Gallagher. Chase, how's it going today? Thanks for having me on the show.
Mr. Penny, thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to talk to your audience, have a great conversation with you. I'm Chase Gallagher. I'm not a Delco guy. I'm a Chester County guy, full, you know, through and through. And I own CMG Landscaping. Me and Jake were just talking about my upbringing. I started my business when I was 13 and grew that business, saved my money, reinvested it. At the age of 20, I got into real estate. I own $2.8 million in real estate, and I'm looking to make that $10 million.
Hell yeah, man. I love it. Shooting for the stars. And it's super attainable, bro.
And even so at 10, dude, even at 10, Jake, I think that's not that much because real estate's so expensive. Dude, 100, if I had 100 million, you know, then I'd be like, all right, dude, you know?
Yeah. But we're not Silver Spoon guys. So we got to build it from the ground up. You know, we're part of it and whatnot. So it's really funny. We have like the same background as our upbringing. You know, you started landscaping because you didn't want to go to the ordinary job of being when you were a kid. You started passing out flyers, mowing lawns and everything like that at 12 years old. And similarly, my father helped me do the same thing at 13 years old and grow that over the years. So tell me about that. How did that like start? Was it, you know, pushed upon you from your parents, or is it something, you know, you totally see and took into your own hands?
You know, I was money hungry from a young age. I always loved two things I loved growing up was guns and money. Don't ask me why God made me how he made me, but I was like, literally, I don't even know when I started doing chores for my parents, right? They'd pay me a dollar to vacuum the, you know, bottom of the floor or a house. And then I was like, well, give me more. And it got to the point where I was like cooking dinners for the family every night. And I would like do all this stuff. And I was mowing the lawn for my dad, cooking dinners for my mom. And so I wanted to make more money. I was 12, 13. I was doing all these chores and I started calling around places because I wanted to get a job. And you had to be 14 to get a job in my state. So then I was like, well, what's some other ways to generate revenue? And I was always like a seeker, dude. I always asked questions. So I was on YouTube. How can I make, like, I guarantee I was Googling, like, how can I make money at 12 or 13? And so then I saw this guy on YouTube, Geek to Freak. And he basically, small channel, one guy, 40 years old, mowing lawns. And I would just study this guy every day after school, emailed him, got his flyer, put my own name, Buzzcut Lawn Care, on it at the time. My mom had a corporate job. Both my parents are corporate people. She took these flyers that we made and she'd stay late at work, print thousands of them out. Then she'd bring them home. So we didn't have to pay for the Vista print or staple stuff, Jake. It was a blessing. And then I'd sit there, rubber bands and garbage bags. And I'd sit there for hours every day and make garbage bags of these. And then we were storing them in the basement. And that way, when spring came around, dude, I literally convinced my parents to like drive around. I'd hang out the passenger seat and just put them into, mailboxes. Long story short, that's how I got started. Was I got my first couple clients. I was 12 when I did my neighborhood only. And then my brother got his license when I was 13 and a couple of his buddies. And I put it a trailer hitch on his Ford Escape. I had the trailer. I had the zero turn. And then, I hired his buddies to drive his SUV from neighborhood to neighborhood. It was crazy how we got started, but we're here now.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. It's funny. Buzzcut Landscaping. My company was called Let's Be Green. And instead of like B-E, it was B-E-E with a bumblebee.
So, dude, we have very similar story, dude.
It was funny, too, because I was only 12, 13, and I started to get lawns that were further than walking distance in my neighborhood. So it wound up that my mom, she worked as a cleaner and whatnot. So she was like home during her schedule allowed it, I should say. And she had a Dodge Nitro at the time, and then an Acadia, a GMC Acadia, and with a hitch on the back. And my dad got a trailer for me, and she would drive me to all the lawns, sit in the car until I was done, and then drive me to the next one. you know, through and throughout all summer long until I eventually was able to get my license. And I got a truck, didn't have any AC, had the old wheel down freaking windows, man. The top was falling down. It, you know, I hired all my buddies in high school and whatnot. It was a great time, but it taught me a lot over the years of just like working for yourself, that joy and, you know, creating your own hours, creating your own structure, building your own destiny, and also like making way more money than any of your buddies were. So you were able to have nicer things. So tell me how that was, that impact. You know, what did you do with the money? Did you save it? Did you invest it? What happened from there?
I was always a saver. So, but I wanted to interrupt you back there. Cause you, dude, it's kind of weird how similar our stories are. So at one point my brother had totaled his car. I had a whole business at this time. I was probably 14 or 15 and I was 14 and my mom just so happened to be unemployed at this time. So, it worked out because same thing, my brother like totaled his car or he quit on me or something. This is, you know, and so, so she drove me from property to property. He totaled his car. I had this business, second year in business. I'm like doing mulchings now. I'm like, I got 15, 16 mowing clients. She went out and bought this GMC Canyon, like used little thing. It had rolled down windows, brother.
Nice,
and she would just drop me off in a neighborhood, go leave, or like, you know what I mean? And come back. But, so very similar story. And then in regards to the original question, what did I spend my money on? I was a huge saver. I saved every single dollar. I still remember going to the Malvern Federal Bank and depositing the first dollar my parents like gave me just to set up a child's account.
Mm-hmm.
And I saved my money. I mean, I'd go thrifting. Like I was into guns and like weapons. So like I'd convince my parents to take me to the thrift stores and like I'd buy these swords and like just stuff like that, like very minimal items. And then I know in high school I had a jewelry, like middle school, high school, I had this jewelry kick. And so I bought these gold chains and these silver chains and all this stuff. I spent some stupid money on that. But for the most part, I was just solely saving my money.
Nice, nice. Yeah. I looked at it when I was landscaping. It's like, how can I use this money to invest it to eventually get to that fancy word that everybody like loves, especially, well, not maybe not everybody, but I know me and you do real estate, right? So it was funny, my aunt Donna, she would always talk about Peter Lynch, Warren Buffett, all these bigger stock investors and whatnot. So I begged my parents to open me a brokerage account with TD Ameritrade at 14 years old. Little did they know, they set up the account under theirs and had full margin on the account. So at 14 years old, I had a margin account of $183,000. So it was totally nuts, man. So I started, you know, reading books about stock trading and everything. Like every single dollar I made, for the most part, went into this brokerage account. And I started buying Apple stock, all this stuff with, you know, because I always thought like, hey, that was the way, right? I mean, you're a little bit younger than me. So, the accessibility to information back then when I was, you know, when you got started, there was, I don't even think there was like a YouTube. There was probably YouTube, but it wasn't like a thing to where it was like, oh, well, let me go to YouTube. Let me search real estate or let me search, you know, this guy that does landscaping. Let me learn from him. So I thought, you know, investing in the stock market was the only way. Little did I know it was a roller coaster. But eventually propelled me into real estate, which I originally wanted to get into anyway. So why don't you talk about a little about your real estate journey, how CMG Landscaping has, you know, projected you to get involved in the real estate industry. What was that time and place where you were like, hey, man, real estate's the way. I need to start funneling money into this to eventually become financially free.
Yeah, these are all great questions. Before I started my business, as we were discussing before the podcast started, I was always into like making money. So I was Googling, I kept seeing Rich Dad Poor Dad. So I was in seventh grade. I read Rich Dad Poor Dad. I literally was so naive at the time. I would walk around this school and tell people I'm rich or like, I'm going to be rich. I was ignorant or just not educated. Literally like read the book and thought I was just rich all of a sudden. Like it was kind of crazy. So that's how big of an impact it was. So I read this book. I didn't have any money for real estate. So that's why I started my company. And then obviously a landscaping company, high overhead, lots of equipment. It took me some years, but I always knew I wanted to buy real estate. So between, you know, 13 to 20, I had built like a business and had a team and all this kind of stuff, and I saved all this cash. So what was the question?
So how did you, what you learned from CMG, the entrepreneurial skills, tips and tricks, how did that help you win in real estate and build, you know, you said, I think $2.8 million portfolio so far at the age of 23.
What owning a business, you always deal with problems. And I tell people this, I tell my students this, you know, the more problems you can consume, and like almost like a conveyor belt, a problem comes in, solution goes out, and it's just done with, I think the more successful you're going to be across the board. So being that I was in business, being that like things happen in business with equipment and repairs and all this kind of stuff, I think that propelled me in the real estate game. And knowing that this stuff's not cheap, so I had savings, all different things. Being a people person, you have to be, knowing things cost money. So like, for example, on a flip, right? We buy it. Oh, I'm going to spend 20 grand on this house. It doesn't need a roof. It just needs an HVAC system, you know, and then you end up spending $38,000. Well, that's, you know, you take the punch and you just keep rolling, brother. And so, that's what business taught me, and you're always going to have problems. What do you think about that?
Oh man. You know, it's funny that you said, oh, I'm going to spend $20,000 on this rehab. I wind up costing you 38. So my first actual year in real estate, I went all in, dropped out of college, had no idea even how to, you know, get started. Never had a W-2, never paid any taxes, so I didn't have tax returns. So I was like, all right, I have all this money from landscaping saved up, liquidated my brokerage account. And I said, oh, all right, I'm going to go out, start finding deals. And I put all this earnest money deposit down. It was like, you know, $50,000. I was 20 years old and not knowing where I was going to get the lending from whatsoever. So, yeah, like, you know, going through that whole trial tribulation, I don't want to go too deep into it, but wind up getting turned down by every single bank in my area because I didn't have W-2s or tax returns, to try to get my dad to co-sign. That didn't work either because the properties were in total, you know, they were anarchy, like they were just trash. So they don't lend on those type of properties, and wind up having to learn how to raise private capital from the get-go and not have any experience or backing. So it was like, you know, always adapting, always getting punched in the face and getting right back up and not taking failure for an option. Because fast forward about, I want to say, a year and a half after that happened, right? That was my first punch in the face with real estate. You know, I thought I was the man. Everything was going. I was 22 at the time. I felt unstoppable. I'm like, oh man, I'm buying all these properties. I'm a fix and flipper, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to be rich. And I have five projects going on at once. Every single contractor steals from me. They burn me on all the deposits. So it's like 15 grand there, 20 grand there, blah, 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 blah. And my credit cards are totally maxed out too. Because I was using my credit cards at the time to fund, you know, some of the material costs on the rehabs. And I was belly up, totally belly up, over $500,000 in debt at that time. I didn't have any way out. We went to our parents and our family members and we were like, hey, can you spare us some, you know, two nickels to rub together, please? And they were like, no, we don't have any money. Because we, again, I don't come from a silver spoon family or a wealthy family. I'm just come from a working class, normal, average Joe family that has no investing experience or savings per se, right, or any day fund. And they were like, hey, take this as a learning experience, sell everything, recoup what money you can, pay the people off, and get a job and work your ass off so you can repay all those debts over your lifetime. Because $500,000 in debt, I mean, that's a lot of money to repay if you're working a regular job. And
is
I was
it
like,
variable debt? Was that private money or was that mortgages included?
It was a mix between credit card, right? Because of I was funding some of the material on that. and then private notes on the properties. And then I also have my own cash involved as well. So it was definitely more than half a million. It was just like, that was what was owed on the debt side, not including like, that was just private notes.
You're belly up, you're trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, and I just didn't take no for an answer. I didn't take that as a failure, and I learned how to swing a hammer. You know, our fathers, my significant other, who's my partner, our fathers helped us day in and day out, every single night that they could after work, finish those projects up. And, you know, that growing experience, that pain that we suffered, is like, dude, we couldn't pay any of our bills. Our parents had to buy us food. You know, my credit went from like a 780 to like a 400. Couldn't pay my truck note. Couldn't buy food. Couldn't pay the credit cards. Nothing. It was
I would want to do to those contractors, brother. Just hearing this, I want to.
I mean, the first three letters in contractor is con, right? that's another thing. But yeah, man, I totally. Long story short, that was a ramble. But no, I totally understand. You know, you have to keep fighting to push forward. So, you know, you talked about your trials and tribulations. Let's talk about a little bit of like team leadership, management. You have a landscaping crew. You have a full out army behind you right now in CMG. So what did it take to build a culture around that, to see the greater vision within the company so that way you could build to what you have today?
Number one, it starts with like a dream and like a vision, right? So, you know, long story short, my current project manager used to own his own business. And when I was 14 to 16, I worked for him part-time. I would be in his trucks working for him, learning how to edge a bed, learning how to mulch, learning how to all these different things. So it was so funny. Back then, I would just share like some of my goals. I'd be in his truck, he'd be driving it. And I would just talk about different things. And lo and behold, dude, I think I look back at it today. He saw my vision. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was a young hustler, dude. I'd beg him for hours because I was working my own business and his business. So he's now my PM. He's my project manager. He ended up selling his business. I went and grew my business. I listened to his advice. And then, you know, a couple of years after that, he didn't like the company he ended up, you know, working for or whatnot. I hired him back, and then we developed teams under him. So I did like the Alex Ramosi thing. I had no idea what I was doing, but I hired top down, right? So I was like, I know Wes knows how to do X, Y, and Z. At the time, Jake, it was talk about trials and tribulations. I was 19. My doctor had just told me I would need a kidney transplant. So I was coming out of high school, felt on top of the world. I had a couple guys, like, you know, white dudes working with me, and, you know, and then I was told I need a kidney transplant. I'm thinking like, what the hell? This was kind of out of the blue. I had a kidney disease my whole life, essentially since second grade, but I didn't know at the time it was decreasing the way it was until he told me. So in my head, I'm kind of putting these dots together, and I'm like, listen, I either need to buckle up and like hire Wes and pay whatever it costs, or I need to like downsize and just, you know, shut the business down, because with a transplant, you're out of order for months at a time. So long story short, this is all God's plan. But Wes came on board. I paid him what he wanted plus more, because he's not going to switch for less money. And then he found my foreman found his helper, and now we built crews below them. But long story short, man, that's where it all started. So going back to culture, even to this day, I'll run 20, 30 estimates in a week. But Saturdays in the spring, I work alongside all my guys. So, you know, we're a hardworking company. We springtime, it's 10, 12 hour days and 6 days a week. And we got to do. So I think part of the culture is not only just, number one, being on site on Saturday, dude, I work 12 hours right next to them. I mean, running around like a ninja in these yards. You should see me, Jake. It's kind of crazy. It's like a 12 hour workout, and I love it. And then the other end too, every time I pull up to a job site, you see my vibe, you see me on Instagram, dude. I'm a positive person. I have a smile on my face. I'm fist bumping all my guys. And I feel like you don't see that in my industry too much. A lot of the landscaping companies in this area across the country, you got old grumpy owners that want to growl and yell at their guys. And I'm the opposite, man. I understand, you know, and there are times where I just want to, you know, you're a leader, you've got jobs are behind. Why is this taking longer? Why did that just break? Right. But you gotta go above that and think long term. And so I show up with the right attitude every single day. Other things, like all my equipment's almost brand new, so guys aren't working with crappy old equipment. They love that. And together you just build like that culture, is how I see it. I'm a 23-year-old. I'm not, you know, an experienced person. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, you nailed it on the head when you said the landscaping industry, hardscaping industry, is filled with a lot of grumpy old operators that have no culture, no respect for their employees. And it's just go, go, go. Where's the check? Where's the check? Where's the check? I've experienced it. I know other people in the industry. My significant other worked for somebody in the industry and literally 2x his business within 8 months.
What was the name of the company?
Oh man, that's for
throw
that's
it
for,
down here. I need to hear it.
Maybe another time, but took it from 2 million to 5 million within 8 months. Wound up making too much money. They didn't like it, so they got rid of her. And now, supposedly, from the grapevine I hear, they're no longer doing that good. So, yeah, a lot of the employees left because you can't disrespect your employees. You have to have a good culture. The majority of these guys in these industries that work, they love what they do. All they want to do is work, and they're very passionate about what they do. So if you come out there with like a bull in a china shop and yell and scream and whatnot and don't show any appreciation, dude, it's no way in any business whatsoever. You have to, like you said, you got to show up with a smile, you know, give them that sense of, hey, they're part of this mission. They're part of this greater purpose. They're my employee, but they're also my friend too, right? We're all in conglomerate together. And they have to feel a little warm and fuzzy sometimes. You know, you have to uplift them, not push them down. Yeah, if they're having a slack day, all right, cool. Well, let's get, hey, guys, how can we get back to it, right? How can we get back on track instead of, you know, crucifying them? So no,
so part of that's communication. And I like a certain way of communicating. And so like even my PM, guys have different levels of communication. Guys want to talk about problems, and that's okay. But, you know, I always tell my guys, let's just focus on the solution, whether it costs me money, because who else is going to, you know what I mean? Let's just focus on solutions and keep moving forward. So like you just said, it's about like, instead of like I feel like a lot of old guys would see the stuff we get into and oh, we're done for the day. I'm going home. Let me fix this, versus me. I'm like, all right, let's get this fixed. Let's just keep moving forward.
Yeah. And like, I live in a state of abundance. There's never a problem. There's just always solutions because everything's fixable, right? You just have to, all right, how process it real quick. And then, all right, one step forward, two step forwards. Okay. Problem solved. I don't get mad anymore. I used to get mad. I used to be a hothead, or like, you know, something would happen on a real estate job, like a sewer line would bust and it cost me $8,000. I'm like, all right, cool. It happens. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm not Jesus. I'm not God. You know, I'm not down there in the soil. I can't control it. If it's something I can't control, dude, I don't care. Like somebody set one of our houses on fire back in November, total arson. We thought it was a joke at first. So eventually later that day, after the one tenant told us, we drove past the property because I was like, you know what? Something told me. He texted like 9 a.m. around 1 o'clock. I'm like, let me just see. Let me just drive by. What do you know? We drive by, dude, and every single window is busted out of the property. Flame marks all over the outside. And I'm just like, holy shit. Someone actually did burn our house down. Like, didn't burn it down, but like, I mean, it's charred. And I like left. I was like, man, this real estate, I guess, huh? We always talk about this shit. Oh, insurance, insurance, insurance. But nobody ever, like, not a lot of people actually experience it. And we didn't get a call from the city, fire department, police, or nothing. They still have yet to give us a police report. And that was back in November. So It's full insurance, like covered it and everything. So it's not a big deal. We actually made out better than we would have, right? Because we had a construction loan on it. We didn't even touch a cent of the construction loan yet up to that when that happened. So we got a big payout from the insurance company, and we have the construction loan to still redo the whole property because we were fully gutted anyway. So it worked out like we came up on that one. But it's just funny that yeah, it's a funny story. But I didn't get pissed off at all. I was just like, ah, whatever. It is what it is. You just can't get mad anymore about anything.
Where are you buying these properties at?
All over South Delco. So like Ridley, Prospect Park, Norwood, Chester, Brookhaven, Parkside.
And all your units are Section 8.
I would say 90 are Section 8. But yeah, I mean, pretty much the whole portfolio is Section 8. We only have about like 8 regular.
And
Yeah.
do you guys self-manage or have a management company?
Yeah, we self-manage. We in the beginning we had a management company, but it just really didn't work out, especially on a smaller scale. There's not enough money in management companies. If you think they're only getting $100 a month or $200 a month to manage your property, that doesn't cover any administration costs. That probably covers half a day to 2 day of a day of work for one of their employees. So it was a terrible experience. So I was like, all right, how can I vertically integrate everything? My construction company, the real estate, and the property management into one. We figured out a bunch of procedures, systems, and processes, and we totally nailed it down. I mean, we probably spend on 100 units, we probably spend 2 hours a week managing the whole portfolio. So it's really, it's not that much. Like everybody says, like, oh, you don't want to manage your own properties. Yet I'm saving like $300,000 a year for not paying a property manager, and that's going right back in my pocket. So why would I spend that money? I mean, why would I give up that money for something so easy as long as you're dialed in and understand how to do it, especially on the maintenance side too? It's like, okay, the property manager is going to tack on 10 to 15% on top of every single maintenance request you have. Well, that's stupid. They're not doing anything. They're literally just connecting some Joe Schmo to the job. My guys are always in the neighborhoods because they're working on our new projects. So all they have to do is, hey, go stop over 123 Main Street, stop the job you're at right now, send someone over there, fix it real quick, come back. It doesn't really cost me much more. And we're doing full gut renovations on every single property. So everything's brand new to begin with. So any maintenance calls that come up, it's usually within the first month of them moving in, and it's little stupid shit, like a little leak in, because the valve wasn't all the way on, or something came loose. It's just dumb stuff. And then from there, it's just like smooth sail.
I love it.
We don't really have any problems.
So do some of your tenants have like Section 8 pays all the rent, or do they pay a majority of the rent and the Section 8 tenants have to pay more?
Some of them pay actually 100%. Some of them pay like 80%. Right. What I mean, sorry. So Section 8 pays either 100% of some of them, right? Because also, if they lose their job, Section 8 fully kicks in, they pay the 100%. And then some of them pay like, 20% out of pocket, whatever. So it's usually like $100 to like $300 a month of what the tenant's portion is. If that sometimes,
Wow.
and it, with the whole COVID bullshit, and just the way the economy has been going over the past 4 years, I saw like a need to get into consistent, predictable sources of income. And partnering with the government, has its pros with through Section 8. You're always going to get paid on time. There's 9.3 million people on government assistance, housing assistance. So it's never going to go anywhere. No administration is ever going to get rid of it because that's 9.3 million homeless people on the streets. It would be total chaos and a civil war faster than the one that's probably happening already. Yeah, no, it's been like the best switch from regular tent like rental to Section 8. What's your take on that? Are you doing regular rental or how's that going?
I mean, that's why I wanted to hear if you self-manage them. Do you have a team member that manages it, or is it you and your wife that are managing it?
So I deal with all like the project management stuff. So I deal with the construction side. Once I deal with acquisition, disposition, raising capital, and project management. And then from there, she deals with tenant placement, lease ups, and then full property management. I don't deal with any of that stuff. So she has her lane, I have my lane. It's literally just us two running the whole portfolio.
Okay. All right. That's what I was curious. I mean, my assistant in my landscaping business, now she manages my tenants. So, we have some light systems and processes in a Google Doc. Hey, you're approved to make any contractor maintenance repair 200 and below. Anything else, they have to call me and get the approval. She sets them up with my CRM, Avail, and like does the auto pay, all this kind of stuff. Now, here's my recent conclusion. I own stuff in Pottstown. I'm sure you know that market. I own stuff in Downingtown. I own stuff in Westchester, and all these markets are like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you got Pottstown as far as, income and whatever, poverty, whatever, and you got like Westchester, which is the richest, right? Then you got Westchester, the richest part of our county here in Chester County and Kennett Square. I have a unit out there. So I think if you're gonna do Pottstown, Chester, all those things, I think partnering with the government is a golden idea, because sometimes it takes Corey, my assistant, a lot of time and pressure, and we're threatening eviction notices on their doors, and I've put them up myself before if they don't pay, and it's just chasing a rabbit for money. And again, I do care. I would love my money on time every month, but if you don't pay, you're gonna pay me late fees, and now I'm just making more than my cash is going to make in a savings account. So pay late. You know what I mean? Whatever. But, and then I have, single families in Westchester and Downingtown, and those people auto pay, barely any issues, great tenants. You know what I mean? It's a vibe. So I think it depends on your strategy. I think me going forward, as of right now, I do landscaping and coaching, consulting, and business growth, and that's where I make my money. And I buy my real estate to cost segregate and offset my tax burden. So I want to go into Westchester, Downingtown, Malvern, and buy expensive real estate. Try and get as minimum low payment down, whether it's my what is it, 5% conventionally for a residential, or 10% down commercial property under CMG Landscaping. I want to cost seg that property. I obviously want to cash flow something. I'm not looking for anything crazy. And that's my strategy this year.
No, it's really smart to offset your taxes through real estate with your landscaping company. But I've been offloading my higher end rentals that I can just quickly go in that I've been rehabbing in the last like 5, 6 years, scratch and splash paint and sell them and take a few $100,000 off the table. I've been slowly doing that over the past year and a half, and just shoveling that money right back into lower income areas where I can take that $100,000, $200,000 and buy 10 properties that'll make me 10 grand a month in cash flow. Because I'm not like an equity guy. I'm a cash flow guy all day long. Like, equity does you no good at the end of the day. It's stuck. It's like a 401k if you think about it. The only time it's good is if you refinance or if you sell a property. Other than that, it does no damn good thing for you. Cash
Right.
flow where it comes in.
And yeah, I want to communicate that I agree with you 110%. And what I guess, my lower end stuff, Pottstown, I have some units in Shamokin I'm getting rid of. I don't know if you ever heard of Shamokin, PA. It's near
I've
Portland.
heard of Shmokin. I always thought it was a joke, Shmokin.
Yeah, no. The lower end stuff, I cash flow a lot. Like, I make sure, hey, is this gonna cash flow? Is it an easy value add? Meaning I buy it for 90, I put 30 into it appraises at 210 or 185. Like, I like those deals. So I do have those. It's kind of like a balancing act. You know, with like the one I bought last year in Westchester, it's a duplex, 436 purchase price, all money down, $42,000. And then two units, I get about $4,300 in rent every month, and my mortgage is $3,300. And I got a $142,000 cost segregation study on that property for last year. So it'll, like, I like that deal a lot for me. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. No, yeah, like I said, it works perfectly for you, especially, you know, with the cross segregation and everything like that. It's still cash flowing, what, $1,000 a month?
Yes,
and you're coming to the table with a bunch of money, right? Well, not a bunch of money, but you're coming down with your strategy right now is to purchase real estate, grab your cash, take it from CMG, dump it into real estate, lower your tax burden, get the depreciation, the cross segregation to offset any income. And that's a great strategy, you know, for a high income earner on when you have another business. My strategy is all BRRRR. It's the BRRRR, buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. So every single one of my deals, I always have minimal money. Like, I think the worst deal I ever had, I had like $6,000 left in the deal after a BRRRR. But usually I'm getting nice checks back. So we're like, that's my strategy, right? Because this is my full-time thing, right? I don't have another source of income, not yet. We'll be going on to the CMG University type thing very, very soon. But, you know, I don't have any other income to offset besides like the flipping and whatnot. All that money I just funnel right back into, you know, buying real estate or, you know, personal branding stuff so I can write it off or whatnot.
Lambo. So,
dude, yes, absolutely. I'm test driving a Performante this week and a 911, what is it? 911 Turbo S all-wheel drive. It's the 992 version. Dude, it's up in Conshohocken right now. I just went and looked at it over the weekend. Oh, it's beautiful, dude. It's beautiful.
But my buddy, Jake, I want to tell you this story before you make this purchase in case it changes your mind. My buddy last year, I flew out to visit him. He's in the coaching space. And he, when I was out there, he ended up buying this Lambo. He had wanted it for years. Obviously, he put a chunk of money down, got a loan. It was a used Lambo, came with the warranty. And basically, long story short, brother, like he sold it less than a year later, and his total loss on that car was over $100,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you talking about T-Grant?
No. This is T-Grant's a different T-Grant.
Oh, okay.
T-Grant still has that fucking that Lambo, and he just got that.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. Like, I was just looking at it like I was going to buy it as a personal branding thing to offset some taxes and then just use for content and stuff like that. And like, I'm a board member of Ferrari, Pennsylvania, New Jersey. Why I'm getting a Lambo? I changed my mind. I've always wanted a Lambo, right? Always. And then I was going to get a 488. And then I'm just like, man, dude, the maintenance on those things are just outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. Lamborghini is way more cost effective when it comes to maintenance. And they just sound better, honestly. Hopefully nobody from Ferrari ever listens to this podcast.
Yeah, and like, you know, Lambo is like a young, sexy, like, car for dudes. So I want a Lambo at some point. I just got to be prepared. Like, what can I lease one for? Can't you lease one for like $2,500 a month or no?
Like yours, you can. You can get a Lamborghini Urus for that. Absolutely.
What about the Urus is the SUV? What about the Lambo vibe? Like, isn't there a base model I could get for about that price or no?
I don't know. Like, you could always go through, it's called Woodside Credit. They do exotic car financing. They'll do 12 to 15 year notes on these cars. So your payments are around that price anyway. Like, $2,000 to $2,500. So that would be, but you're still coming to the table with like 20% down minimum.
Are you using Woodside for your purchase?
I may or may not. They have some stipulations. I've never had a car that's been over $100,000. That's one of their stipulations. So it's like I'm kind of going through some red tape right now. So if I don't use them, I'm just going to go through Chase Auto and just have them do it. And it'll be like a 72 month note. The freaking payment will be like $4,500, but whatever. A guy's got to have his toys, especially when he works hard for it and can afford it.
Heck yeah. Do you know the guy named Roughneck out here on the main line?
Yeah. I was actually, I saw him at the McLaren Philadelphia car meet this past weekend. Yeah, he's got a nice red STO.
Yeah, he is like a fuck. He's like 9 or 10. He's out here, but he uses Chase Bank for his car financing too. He was like talking. I was at the car meet and like we're Instagram buddies, and he was like, "Yeah, dude, if you ever buy an exotic, bro, just use Chase. Apparently, you got to put a lot of money down, but it seems very easy to work with them."
Yeah, it's like 25% down, I think they require, or 20% down, something like that. But that's good to know. I'm gonna reach out to Rico and ask him who his relationship manager is. But yeah, man, just gonna wrap this up. You know, how can people get a hold of you through for one landscaping needs, Outdoor Oasis, CMG University, or just real estate as well?
Listen, if you guys want to reach out and follow my personal life, my business advice, my real estate stuff, you can go to my Instagram, Chase_Gallagher_. That's more, you know, business, real estate, life, that type of thing. If you guys are in the Philly area and maybe you're looking for a highly qualified landscaper, you can go to CMG_landscape and follow my content on there. If you guys are looking to grow a home service business, whether it be landscape construction, pool service, any home service business, you can go to cmguniversity.com, check out that page, fill out the application, and we can chat. Jake, thank you for having me on your podcast today. I appreciate you.
Awesome, brother.
Thanks for tuning in to Philly Fortune Talks with Jake Penny. Inspired to share your success story? Visit PhillyFortuneTalks.com/guest and let's inspire together.